This is Cut Jib Newsletter Speaks, the podcast for Monday, February the 21st, President's Day, 2022. This is episode 11. JJ Sefton here, along with CBD, misanthropic humanitarian, and for the first time ever on radio, our very own co-blogger, Jay Guevara. Gentlemen, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Afternoon.
Hello.
Welcome to the show. CBD, you are the keeper of the agenda. What do you want to start off with? Obviously, I think the big thing, maybe we should, and I'll ask you, and then I'll tell you, I guess, as is the wont.
Yeah, obviously it's Canada.
Yeah.
So my notes say, Czechoslovakia / Hungary in North America. It's unbelievable what's going on in Canada and to a lesser extent in Australia. Although they reopened their borders. Canada has gone full Soviet satellite, I would say. Not quite Soviet yet, but the juxtaposition between what's going on in Canada today and what happened in Hungary in 56 and Czechoslovakia in 1968 is undeniable. They are authoritarian. It is an affront to 2,500 years of Western culture. And the fact that it's being run by this pretty boy idiot, who is the bastard child of a communist, makes it even worse.
Yeah, it's crazy. Justin, as I call him, as many people call him, Castro, but I add Cescu in there, which I hope he does suffer the fate of Nicolae Ceaușescu and his wife and Mussolini, or somebody called him Mussolini. This is Canada. It's the most shocking thing to me that I just can't wrap my head around, even, and I guess maybe I should after the last 2 years and what happened in this country. This is Canada. This is not a communist country. It's not a banana republic. And here we are, 75 years after World War II, after whatever, 200 and some odd years after after our independence from Great Britain, on North America, we're turning the societies that were supposed to be the great refuge from totalitarian nightmares have turned into probably and are on track to become probably even worse totalitarian nightmares than the real things out there like communist China and Russia and Cuba, merely because of the fact that we have this pedigree of people who are, we've tasted freedom, or we've not tasted, we were nurtured on it. That's the foundation of our country, and we're turning into an absolute nightmare. And it's just, I can't even begin to fathom it.
Well, Canada is nothing but a spoiled child. And, they've been protected by the States for years. They've been protected by Great Britain, the UK, for a number of years. And they've gotten soft. And the problem with Canada is the same problem that we see in the United States, where it becomes a rural versus metropolitan type of conflict. I'm really surprised that the truckers in Canada rose up and did what they did. Will the American truckers and other type of people, rise up and let government know, let the metropolitan people that, elect these idiots? It'll be, interesting to see. But Trudeau, my God, what a dictatorial little pussy. Typical of a government person is that they really don't know what it's like out in the real world. And we're supposed to follow their whims and wishes because they know better than us. And it's just revolting. I wouldn't mind him being run over by a moose, and I'll let it go at that.
I couldn't agree more. I'm shocked. I was shocked by what the developments in Australia vis-a-vis COVID. I would have thought they would be much more gnarly about that type of thing. And now they're going full on fascist with this thing. It's outrageous. And now Canada, you'd think they'd be, the politeness would kick in at some juncture, please stop doing honking, please, that type of thing. And now they're busting heads. It's incredible.
Bucks Rockmorton had a good piece today in his rant, the morning rant, and he talks about it's the productive class as opposed to those who sit and who are behind on their ass and watching computer monitors and dictating. And this is the divide we have with those who make things and do things and build things and make the engine run, and those who just sit somewhere off in an ivory tower and point fingers and make 5-year plans and proclamations. It's sort of like the movie, you know, Fritz Lang's Metropolis. You have those who are living in the upper world, living a life of ease and luxury, and then you have the proletarian masses at the machines underneath. And in some ways, this is kind of looking to be a revolution. And now these people are saying, like Trudeau and Biden and the Davos set and the World Economic Forum set are starting to crack skulls. It's a frightening thing.
But these are people who have never left their sophomore dorm rooms, you know, smoking dope and sitting around with a bunch of other bien pensants and deciding how the world should be run. They went to college. They went directly into a government or non-government organization job. Then they ran for office, and they never did a productive day's work in their lives. You know, I think back to presidents of 100 years ago. You know, they would go back to their homes and they would chop wood, or, you know, they would milk cows. But probably with Roosevelt, you know, the bastard cripple who couldn't milk a cow to save his life anyway.
Or chop wood.
We moved into the American elite. And I think that our political process is reflecting that now. The disconnect between America and its elitist rulers is shocking. Obviously, the same thing is happening in Canada. The idea that Trudeau understands what a trucker does is insane. He doesn't. What's his name? Bloomberg said the same thing about farming. Oh, you know, it's simple to farm. Anybody who's ever met a farmer understands that it's not simple to farm. It's not simple to do a lot of the work that supports America, that is the bedrock of America. And yet these people blithely toss off these ridiculous statements. Well, it's going to bite them in the ass eventually. I'm both impressed and disappointed by the truckers in Canada. There wasn't a drop of violence in spite of the Mounties and their other shock troops trying to foment violence wherever they could. I don't see that similar occurrence in the United States. I think there would be violence had those truckers been American and had they been driving around the Capitol building in Washington.
Well, this was their January 6th moment. I mean, they were itching for something to happen. And even when nothing did happen on January 6th, they're the ones that created the ruckus in the first place. You had the Capitol cops opening the doors for people. You had Antifa and Black Lives Matter Confederates dressed up in MAGA gear that were doing all of the rioting and so on and so forth. And it's unfortunate that you had some poor people who were caught up in the moment in the wrong place at the wrong time just sort of followed them in. And then they were labeled as insurrectionists and as rioters and so on and so forth and terrorists when this whole thing was a pre-packaged, pre-digested, you know, Reichstag fire of a moment in order to clamp down on political opponents. And that's exactly what happened. As far as Canada goes, there's a report that supposedly, I think we had a two at this morning, a very large majority of the Canadian public actually approves of the government clamping down on the truckers. And unless that's a total bullshit poll, that is a very frightening result if it's even anywhere remotely true. So that attitude is just, it's unbelievable. I mean, in a way, maybe the convoy shouldn't have happened. Maybe just the truckers should have just gone on a national strike, and that would have proved the point maybe a lot more than a convoy. So, and now all of a sudden there's a report of a convoy coming to D.C., and oh boy, that's the last thing I think we need. I think they should probably rethink that and maybe either go somewhere where, first of all, don't telegraph your intentions of what you're going to do. Go somewhere else where you're unexpected, or just, like I said, go on a national strike and you'll see what happens. Then when people start feeling the pinch, then maybe the government will sit up and take notice.
Well, back to JJ's point about that poll, and I'm going to go back to my opening statement, is where you have the rural people versus the metropolitan people. I bet you the majority of those people that weren't in favor of that trucker strike were people that live in cities that, you know, they get on their bus or subway line, you know, subsidized by the taxpayers, and they go to their job in an office and they're service. They're not creators. As far as a national United States truckers strike, I'm all in favor of it. you know, and let them surround, let them encapsulate Washington, D.C., and just pinch off everything there. And let's just, you know, I'm not trying to foment violence or anything, but by God, it's about time that, you know, who needs the role, so to speak.
Well, the question is, who has the power? Is it the government or people out there? And there's a big disconnect. The government thinks it has the power. I don't think they do. As you say, if the truckers go on strike, say they went on strike for a week. Wow. Imagine the consequences of that. What could the government do about it? Nothing. They don't have the power. They think they do.
If I were to be a stupid government idiot like Jen Psaki or somebody like that, I would say, well, we should just confiscate the trucks and have the army deliver the goods. And I'm going, oh boy, that's all you need. That's a miscalculation. I mean, I'm not saying that they would do that, but that would be you would force them back them into a corner. So at that point, does the government back down? I mean, let's just go put it back into Canada for a moment, because it's a parliamentary system. Would actually Justin Trudeau and say, look, this is our demands. We're going on strike, and now, you know, not only do we not want the mandates anymore, but we demand that your government steps down completely, and you hand the reins of power over to a conservative or somebody else. Well, what would that look like?
The parliamentary system gives Parliament the power over the Prime Minister. They can have a vote of no confidence, and he can call an early election. But I'm not sure that that could happen in time to save the truckers. I think in the United States, a national strike, or actually a focused strike of the truckers, focused on D.C., New York, I don't know, Madison, Berkeley, would be very, very effective. There's no reason for Dayton, Ohio to be struck by the truckers. As for calling in the army to deliver in the United States, it's ridiculous. The number of truckers that we have far exceeds the number of military drivers that they could mobilize.
Yeah, that was just a hypothetical I was throwing out there that they might react.
No. It's been thrown out before, and it's simply a ridiculous way of dealing with the problem, because who would they supply? Well, they would supply D.C., and that's about it.
It might be a ridiculous thing if the government attempted to play truck driver and delivery driver, but you know damn well that if there's an uprising of truckers or masons or, you know, electricians or whatever, the government's not going to let it be. They're not, you know, this regime, this Biden-Obama regime, is not going to sit back and just let the everyday man put up a fight or a strike or something without them responding, because they're just power hungry, egotistical bastards.
But that speaks to Che Guevara's point. Who has the power? They think they have the power.
Right.
I'm not 100% sure that they do. There is simply nothing they can do about a national trucker strike in the United States. They cannot change it.
No, they cannot change it, but you know damn well they're not just going to sit back and go like, well, you know, okay, we're just going to let them do their thing and let them get it out of their system.
Vast majority of these truckers are independent, so you can't call up J.B. Hunt and say, well, if you don't deliver, we're going to X or Y or Z. Oh, what that would be, I have no idea. What do you say to an independent trucker? You have to drive? I can't see that happening. It's simply impossible to do. The truckers of the United States have tremendous power over commerce in this country. And if they are organized and wield that power, it would be very, very interesting and very, very quick, because, you know, shutting down New York City, you know, stopping the thousands of semis that go into New York City each day to supply grocery stores and hardware stores and clothing stores, it would be incredible. There would be chaos within 2 or 3 days in New York.
Sure. And that would be awesome. But I just don't see the government just, you know, sitting back on their hands and waiting for this thing to play out. What would they do? I know several truckers. I know a couple guys that work for major trucking firms. I know a couple individuals that own their own rigs. And I just don't put anything past this current regime about getting even, whether it, you know, I mean, look at OSHA. Look at OSHA in the stupid COVID prick rules that they wanted to insert into American life. I just don't, it'll be interesting to see if they go for the strike, and I'll be happy if they do. But don't expect Biden and his cronies just to sit back and go, okay, we'll get them some other day.
So what could they do? I mean, suppose they require truckers to drive. All the truckers have to do is get on the freeway, axle to axle next to each other, and drive 20 miles an hour down the freeway.
Well, but see, now
then you say, now you have to specify how fast they drive and everything. Okay, I mean, well, what do you do?
Well, Jay, back to that point is that, okay, if they're down an interstate, there's minimum speed laws that they have to follow. And if they're a national known company, say like J.B. Hunt or what have you, they might be facing the wrath of the government rather than, you know, XYZ, you know, Joe and his wife driving down the road in their semi. But if they're going to drive, if they're going to block the traffic on an interstate, well, you know damn well that they're going to start trying to do the tow truck thing, and don't put it past the, you know, the state troopers of Arkansas or any other state not to be headbusters. I mean, the cops are almost as bad as the people that are in charge.
Yeah, I can't.
I saw Dr. Doom today. I'm sorry, but I'm just, this Canadian thing really pisses me off.
Hey, we're going to take a break for 2 seconds and we'll be right back. Cut Jib Newsletter Speaks, episode 11.
Maslio! Come on now. Brother, what it was that now?
Back, J.J. Sefton, CBD misanthropic humanitarian, and making his debut on the show, our very own Jay Guevara. And in the interstitial moments, we were talking about the stupidity of our government, and I always ask the age-old question, does the ideology drive the incompetence? Does the incompetence drive the idiocy and the ideology, or is it vice versa? Is it a combination, or what the hell is it all about?
I think, well, to some extent, those kind of positions attract stupid and incompetent people. See, I'm smart. I must be smart. I wouldn't be in the government. There's that kind of logic, I think, to it all.
And that allows them they can always segue into the beautiful, seamless descriptions of human nature and how things should be. And our favorite political philosopher, Karl Marx. I know that Jay Guevara has done the heavy lifting for many of us and actually read Marx. I think he's a brave man. I've read a little bit of Marx, and the boredom was matched only by the inanity and the stupidity of his writing. I know that one of Jay's favorites is the labor theory of value, and I'm going to let him point that one out.
I wouldn't say I'm a scholar of Marx any more than I'm than a scholar of homeopathy or astrology or anything. There's no point studying complete rubbish like that. But you know, I have read to some extent. A book I have read that is really interesting is called A Farewell to Marx, which kind of analyzes a lot of stuff from, you know, so he's done the heavy lifting of actually reading that rubbish. But I mean, I view Marx, you know, Das Kapital and whatever, is on a par with the Quran. Two things I tried to read, and you know, you kind of get partway through and you go, you know, this, I could suffer irreversible brain damage if I keep reading this thing, because it's nonsense. My guess for Marx was that his theories were back constructions from things he wanted to be the case. Okay, he didn't look at the evidence and then draw conclusions. He started with conclusions and then kind of backed it out to his theories. That's my guess, at least.
But that's a great description of our current administration. They have a goal, and that is for the United States to be energy independent with solar and whatever other ridiculous energy sources they can think of.
It's solar. It's solar
in 2030, 2050, something like that.
I think 2030. Yeah, 2030. So it's solar and wind, and certainly not nuclear power. But
anyway. Gerbil power, something like that. And yes, it's a noble goal, but it runs smack into little things like physics. We cannot store sufficient amounts of energy from solar and wind and gerbil power to power America. Well,
you need bigger gerbils.
We do need bigger gerbils, but unfortunately,
we have a gerbil gap, I think, with communist China.
But what they are doing is saying, well, we don't have enough energy to power America with these new energy sources. So what are we going to do? Well, we're going to have to decrease the energy demands. And I think that's pretty obvious. That's the only answer. And unfortunately for most of America, that's what they're going to strive for.
But in the same breath, they push for electric vehicles. How does that work?
It doesn't work. How dare you mention that? Yeah, but you see, that's exactly
it. That's how it works.
Yeah.
It's not so much reality or physics. It's reality. It's just you could magically give every trucker EV, semi EV pickup truck for your plumber. Everybody can have EVs in their garage, and we don't have the grid to handle it. We'll never have the grid to handle it. I mean, it's hard enough to get pipelines and everything installed. Talk about power lines and store, you know, even if they did come up a way to store electricity via solar, wind, gerbils, hamsters, and the occasional ferret, is anybody going to let somebody build one of these plants to hold this stuff? I mean, they're closing down gas plants. They're closing down coal-driven plants. They want to close down nuclear. They don't, like, see, it's a noble, you know, you can have some noble goals, but I mean, by God, you got to have some reality in there too.
Has anybody calculated the number of additional power lines we need in the United States to transmit all of this incredible electrical demand? And by the way, of course, you know that power lines cause cancer, because that's what every soccer mom and Karen in the country has claimed for years and years and years. You know, the NIMBY attitude in this country is going to explode once they start. I mean, assuming that it even happens, and I don't think it's going to happen, but if it does, imagine 250,000 volt power lines over everybody's house in the United States, because that's what we're going to need. And
it's really funny, because we're talking about trying to solve a problem that doesn't exist here, because the problem they're trying to solve is this so-called man-made climate change and man-made global warming, which does not exist. It is this simple. Whatever it is, certainly, of course, our industry and our activity does have an impact on the environment. And if we're not careful, yes, we can create love canals, we can create more bullpole disasters, and so on and so forth, which we should not do. We should not, you know, you should not spill crap on the streets and throw your gum wrappers away. It's the same as you shouldn't dump toxic waste into a drinking supply of a community. But that said, the activities of man basically amount to nil. What's driving our environment, or an environment, and driving our climate, which has been driving it for the last almost 4 billion years, is that giant orange ball that's 93 million miles away from us, plus the internal heating of our own the core of the Earth. This is what causes the climate to change, and sometimes it's radical over brief periods, whether it's a volcano like Krakatoa for a couple of years, or over the course of hundreds of thousands of years, when, you know, everything from the magnetic field changes to other fluctuations and so on and so forth, and sunspot activity. That is what drives the climate. But no, these people are saying that no, man's environment impact on the environment is what changes the climate. And that's the most insane thing, and provably wrong. But of course, when you try to say something like that, you know, you get taken to court, like Mark Stein did with that knucklehead crackpot Michael Mann, when he disproved his so-called hockey stick theory of global warming. So that's really it. It's a problem. It's seeking to solve problems that don't exist for the purpose of just imposing your will on people and creating a paradise on Earth.
One night I was having trouble getting to sleep, and I did a rough calculation comparing a billiard ball with the Earth. This upshot of the calculation was, if people, I was likening people on the Earth to bacteria on a billiard ball, and it turned out that the likeness would be, people would have to be about 100 to 200 meters high apiece to be as the same size, relative size, as bacteria on a billiard ball. Now, nobody says, oh, I missed that shot in billiards because the bacteria, you know, are all leaning one way or the other. I mean, it's crazy.
You know, I imagine that the CO2 and the methane that humanity has produced has had some tiny, tiny effect on our weather.
Can I just interject for one moment? CO2, I don't know about methane, but CO2 to me is life. CO2 is plant food. We are carbon-based. You know, if it wasn't for CO2, we would not exist. And people, you know, blood-libeling CO2 as poison, that's just insane. And thank you, I think it was David Souter, who was the one that that stupid, ridiculous Supreme Court decision that basically gave the EPA the right to regulate carbon dioxide, which is why we're in this crazy mess in the first place. It's life. Carbon dioxide is X. Yeah, it's crazy.
You know, I was thinking about posting on at some point on the headquarters on this, but it turns out the primordial atmosphere consisted of nitrogen and carbon dioxide with just a very tiny trace of oxygen. And now it's the other way around. Oxygen and carbon dioxide have exchanged places, all right? Why? Plant life. Green plants evolved, and now CO2 became a trace constituent of the atmosphere, whereas it was used to be oxygen before that. Oxygen is basically refuse. They're getting rid of something through photosynthesis, and they're generating oxygen and just getting rid of
symbiotic relationships, folks. Remember that from biology class, but I guess we can't teach that because it's racist now.
What about the endoplasmic reticulum?
That was my favorite word in eighth grade biology.
I kind of like
Only thing I remember from biology is the endoplasmic reticulum.
I kind of like, you know, flagellum is also a favorite of mine.
Well, I get a kick about, you know, global warming and climate change and all that shit. I live in a state where supposedly we have all these wonderful lakes, the Great Lakes. Where I live, there's 200 lakes within a 25-mile radius. And I was all supposed to have been caused by glaciers. The glaciers were melting, and they filled in the ponds, and they filled in the lakes, and they created the rivers and the Great Lakes. And I'm thinking to myself, huh, who drove a Tahoe back then? Huh, who had a semi-tractor back then? So please tell me, what is the perfect temperature? What is the perfect climate? And no one could, you know, I think 68 degrees and, you know, 20% humidity would be perfect, but it's not there year round. So everybody, it was back to what Rush used to say. Everybody thought that history started with their birth, and it's not. And history's been going on a long time, and we've had cold ages, we've had warm ages, and it's weather, it's climate, it changes, it's life.
But that's the thing. I mean, this speaks to what we were talking about earlier about Marxism. It's, you know, it's the perfectibility of man, and then the hubris that if we can perfect man, we can perfect our surroundings. And it's simply impossible. You know, man is imperfect, and our surroundings are constantly changing, and there is absolutely nothing we can do about it. We can observe it. We can control parts of it. The observation is what has made Western culture. You know, science is essentially, I guess, I mean, Jay will probably correct me, but it's observation of the natural world, figuring out how it works.
Another aspect, too, of all the green initiatives is unintended consequences. We don't know what they're going to be. For example, windmills would be great. They turn out to be osterizers for birds. No one anticipated that, you know, okay, at the time. And, we could have these mirrors everywhere. They fry the birds. It's like, there are all kinds of things. What would be the consequences of going to everything electric and solar and everything and wind power? I don't know. We know what the consequences are of fossil fuels, and so we can manage those perfectly well. But we would doubtless find new problems if we really went whole hog on any of these other alternatives.
Yeah, God knows well, that's the whole thing, is that we, you know, all of this is, all of our experience to this point is really trial and error over thousands of years of human development, of trial and error, of experiment and failure and success. And as those things develop over time, whether it's, you know, systems of energy and manufacturing, or if it's governmental and societal system, we know what works and what doesn't work. And now, over the last however many years, we are giving ourselves one big-ass lobotomy as we try to completely, you know, undo 2,000 years of development and now turn ourselves into totalitarian regimes once again, after having the Enlightenment and Magna Carta and Declaration of Independence and Canada's Declaration of Rights. We're now going to become police states. Same thing with fuels. We know that fossil fuels and the like are the most efficient way of delivering and storing energy and giving us you know, the energy we need for progress and for, you know, for the betterment of humanity. And no, we're not going to do that. We're going to go back to the caves, and we're going to, you know, we're just going to starve ourselves to death and be miserable like we were back in the 10th century. So this is just, it just goes hand in hand.
Unintended consequences.
Yep.
That's, I mean, that's a profoundly conservative
concept. I saw them open for, you know, Led Zeppelin back at the...
Yeah.
And the thing is, what will they be? What will the consequences be? There's no way to know until we do it.
No way to know.
Like, there's something I was...
Well, Nancy Pelosi, when she said, well, we don't know what it'll be until we pass it.
Yeah. I call it jiggling the variables. So faced with some kind of situation like that, for example, like with respect to working out, that coming back, just try, you know, have a problem or an injury or something, rest it or work it. You always have that eternal question. And so what I do is try a little bit, you know, just jiggle the variables, work it a little bit. Is it better or worse? You know, or rest it, better or worse? Don't go whole hog on this whole thing, because if you're going the wrong direction, now you've really aggravated the problem.
Jiggling
the variables instead of changing every single one of them at great cost, without any expectation that you will understand what happens at the end.
And you can't undo it
easily
either. Yeah. Once you've done that, it's hard to undo. You do it just a little bit and you go, is that better? Yeah. Okay. Do it a little bit more. Better. Yeah. A little more. Now it's getting worse again. Okay, yeah. Back off, like that.
He's a conservative.
No, because because of your mosquito bite, we have to amputate both legs and give you a lobotomy. So then we'll know that. Yes, but it's, you know, it's all for the good. We're back for our final segment, and I think the subject once again is the Blitzkrieg happening in the in the Borscht Belt of the Borscht Belt of the world. Our wonderful insanity going on in the war that won't be, or maybe it will, in the Ukraine with Russia. I mean, there's so much war talk. I mean, essentially, this to me, and I could be completely mistaken about this, and I will be eating my hat. It's a complete wag the dog situation. I mean, everything is collapsing in and around on this junta in D.C., and they're so desperate to give this demented pervert a victory and distract from everything else that all of a sudden, voila, peace in our time, and Putin will be able to invade a little bit, and then Biden can get his Nobel Peace Prize, and they hope that it'll save them come November in the midterms. But, I mean, for me, the big worry is that, yeah, they can plan all this out, but what if some trigger-happy knucklehead on either side decides that they're gonna be a hero and start shooting, and then all of a sudden, you know, the genie's out of the bottle, and then who knows what happens. But for now, to me, it's a con. That's all it is.
I have a question, and that is... Do you think Putin ever gets tired of laughing at Biden?
No,
I don't think so.
Biden,
no, not at all.
He is, I think, the most, certainly for Putin, the most amusing thing that has ever happened to him in his entire life. He's a worthless, stupid, powerless man. And Putin is sitting in his dacha laughing. Did I pronounce that correctly?
Laughing? Yes.
It's fine. It works for me.
Dacha or dacha? I don't know. I've heard both. Putin is not a stupid man. And he is not going to start a war if he can get what he wants through diplomacy or simply bullying Biden, not Chamberlain. I apologize for confusing the two. And that's what he's doing, that Biden is going to take advantage of it for some trivial political gain in the United States is sort of embarrassing. I doubt very much that most of America gives a rat's ass about what's going on in Ukraine. They care more about the fact that gas prices are skyrocketing. Inflation is absolutely out of control. Everything is more expensive. It looks like jobs are becoming scarcer. And the idea that Ukraine is going to drive the Biden junta and the Democrat Party to some glorious victory in November is pie in the sky.
I agree with both of you, actually, perfectly well. I suspect that Putin isn't going to invade Ukraine, I don't think. There's no point in his doing that, okay? But I think the idea in the Biden administration, not Biden himself, he's out to lunch, but is that when Putin doesn't invade, he can thump his chest and say, yeah, I stared him down. I sent Kamala Harris over there to sort him out. and the fact is, you know, I don't think Putin ever had any intention of invading. There's no point. He can Finlandize Ukraine perfectly well and run it remotely by proxy. So this is their way of trying to get the stink off them from Afghanistan and inflation and everything else that's going on. Yeah, you know, as I said, Kamala is over there, you know, kicking ass and taking names.
No, she's not.
Is that how they describe it now?
Well, they're trying to imply that.
Showing ass.
We're going to stand strong and, you know, stare at it. Come on.
with her cackle. Let me get on my knees for you, Vat.
Yeah, she'll be cackling her way into everyone's Oh my God, the nuclear cackle. That'll do it. Yeah, we will back it down now.
No, I think Jay is correct. I think that is the plan. But I think my original point is that America just doesn't care that much. There are much more important things going on in most people's lives, and this is
well. You know, there was a poll that was just out with, you know, what the Democrats' top concerns were and what the Republicans' top concerns were. And Ukraine's on any of those lists. So they can think that, you know, it'll take the American public's mind off of it, but they're not. I mean, when gas just went up again here in my neck of the woods. It's almost up to $4 a gallon. Went grocery shopping a week and a half ago, and the shelves are, you know, they're lacking. You know, so we've got supply issues, we've got inflation issues, and CBD was right. Nobody gives a rat's ass about Ukraine. I could care less.
Well, the ironic thing is that the situation in Canada is completely stealing the headlines from anything that's going on in Ukraine. I mean, people are really paying attention to what's going on up there. And I mean, they can thump their chests all about, oh, you know, it's the summit, the this, the that, the troops are amassing, there's going to be a war. No one's paying attention to that. What's going on north of the 49th parallel has got people really, you know, really aggravated and infuriated because that's heading here before long. Ukraine is, please, it's not registering
at
all.
What could we do about Ukraine, even if we wanted to? I mean, logistically, it'd be a nightmare. I mean, how would we do? It's adjacent
to
Russia.
That would stop them.
Well, I mean, militarily, yes, we could do something. Our use of air power to assist the Ukrainian army, that would certainly complicate things for Putin. But that's, you know, you're talking about starting a theater
stop and take a moment and think about that for a second. And American air power bombing Russian military unit. This is imponderable.
Yeah.
What could go wrong?
Jay is correct. You know, for all intents and purposes, there is nothing we can do short of starting a war. Or expanding a local war into something that could easily spiral out of control. But it's not going to happen. I really believe it's not going to happen. Jay's original point, why would he do it? Why would he start a war if he can get everything he wants by not starting a war? So.
Exactly. And on that cheerful note, I think we've come to the end of the show here, episode 11 for the Cut Jib. Did you have something else you wanted to say?
This has been a really great conversation today, I thought.
Have a nice conversation.
Well, I think we should talk about the Olympics.
Okay.
Let's go back. Erase. We have one more thing to talk about.
Let's talk about
the Olympics.
I don't know anything about the Olympics, and I don't care about them. But if anyone else has anything to say about the Olympics, I would be happy to listen.
There was
Olympics.
Yeah, exactly. Die Olympics, die. Perfect. They've destroyed athletics in the world. And
personally, I'm gonna root for this the junk tucker from the University of Pennsylvania. She's more than a woman to me. She's, I don't know what she is, to, yeah. not to me, but the, you get the idea. Dear Lord, we've gone insane. Women, men posing as women in women's athletics, and you know, and potential, and Canada becomes a freaking police state. This is the state of the world, ladies and gentlemen. All because of a virus that's relatively innocuous, and because people want to. I don't know. I'm stammering at this point. I'm completely gobsmacked.
Speaking of the virus, my wife and younger brat went to a concert last night at Madison Square Garden. I picked them up and I asked how many people within the garden, which holds 20,000 people for a concert, how many were wearing masks? And they said very, very few. Now, this is in the heart of New York City, which is, you know, that's Karen country. I see people in New York all the time walking with wearing a mask. It's 25 degrees. There's a wind blowing and they're wearing a mask to protect themselves from COVID. And yet in this 20,000 seat arena, very few people wearing masks. I think even in the heart of socialist New York, Karen filled New York, people are getting sick and tired of it, which is 2 years too late, but I'll take it.
Well, I went to Home Depot yesterday, and I was getting in my car. Karen drove up in her Prius, going about 2 miles an hour. Okay, and she was sitting in the car, and as she sat there for a minute, and she very carefully put a mask on, and then looked over at me and gave me the stink eye because I wasn't wearing one. And I thought, this is perfect.
Did you tell her she was number one?
No, I just ignored her. But I mean, you know, it was clear I was getting the stink eye. Like, how dare you know? Like, come on, you know, get serious.
You know, we laugh at this, and it is laughable. But at the same token, look at the mental manipulation over something like this, and now you could sort of understand sort of the mental manipulation over claiming people are white supremacists and terrorists and insurrectionists and cheering on a government when it arrests them, throws them in jail. Confiscates their belongings, freezes their bank accounts, confiscates their children, and you know, this is it's a pretty short trip from one to the other. And that's
but it's for their own good. That's why they do that.
Jawohl.
We're gonna do all this stuff to you, but it's for your own good. I go, don't do me any favors.
Exactly.
Okay? Yeah.
Exactly. On that cheerful note, now we're going to sign off. This has been Cut Ship Newsletter Speaks, Episode 11. JJ Sefton, CBD Misanthropic Humanitarian, Jay Guevara. Thank you all very much for joining us, and we'll see you again real soon, hopefully if we haven't been arrested.
Thank you very much, folks.
Thanks.
It's been fun.